This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. Christmas is nearly here and so is the World Cup final. Mark, how's things? Are you feeling suitably festive?
It was the Racing Post Sports Desk Christmas party yesterday.
I assume my invite's lost in the post or caught up in the strikes.
It must have been. I'm not entirely sure. I can't. You missed out on that one, Jack. We did have a couple of strays from other departments that came along and helped us spend some of the budget that we were given. But we went to one of them mini golf, crazy golf places. Steve Palmer was there, was marking his ball off the first tee, I think, probably pushing it, but off the first start, and didn't perform very well. I'm not sure if it was the amount of alcohol he consumed before he arrived in the place, but a good time was had by all, and I suppose nothing really gets you in the mood for Christmas more than a World Cup final, does it? These are strange times.
They really are. We'll be getting on to the preview of Argentina against France shortly. We'll also be looking ahead to the Boxing Day fixtures. The Premier League returns very soon, so we'll mark your card with that one. Mark, I think it's only right to have a sort of brief look back at the tournament. I must say I've really enjoyed it. I like the fact it's been in the winter. It's given me something to do in the dark evenings. Just looking back through the tournament then, who's really excited you from a team perspective? And we won't include Argentina and France in that category.
Yeah, so I think, first of all, I mean, I agree that, on the pitch, I think the World Cup, it's been a treat to watch the games, and that it has given, when it was four matches a day, it was absolutely crazy. It felt, it was just wall to wall, wasn't it? I suppose in terms of the teams, I think this is the problem with international football, really, in that it's so far behind club football now, just in the way that it's played. I'm not sure there were any great teams. I think there were some good ones. Brazil at times, but maybe were a touch unbalanced. I've mentioned I liked Germany. I thought that actually they were the closest to a club team. And look, they only played three matches, and I'm still getting mocked for believing that they were going to get through. But in terms of like how they actually played the game of football that I kind of know and understand, it was much closer to the club level that we come to expect on a weekly basis compared to how France and Argentina, and we'll get onto them, and played. I think England were as good as anyone in the tournament, and maybe that is reason for optimism and then also reason for sort of disappointment over what might have been. I think England fans tend to fall into two camps. You get the it's coming home, we're going to win, with the greatest team ever sort of, I suppose it's getting smaller, that group of fans. And I think that actually it's been overtaken by sort of real doom and gloom merchants that think everything is wrong with the team at all times. But I think if you looked at it objectively, you'd struggle to pick too many teams better than England. I think they had a lot of what you would need to win an international tournament. The one thing I think that was just missing, and I'm not saying it was a winning edge, I don't think it was that. I'm always wary of what a winning edge is. I don't understand how you quantify sort of.
Do you think it's a concern, Mark, though, that the fact England have done well in tournament football under Gareth Southgate, but they've lost, was it Croatia, Italy and France now? And I guess France was probably the best performance out of those three, but never really looked convincing in any of them. And that will surely concern those that are looking at Southgate's future.
Well, I think Croatia 2018, I agree. I think the team has taken big steps forward since 2018. They've got better players now. If you look at that 2018 squad to, what's coming through now with Saka and Foden, two exceptionally gifted younger players. I think Kane's a better player now, just in terms of his all-round game. Bellingham. I'm not sort of that worried. I was more annoyed at with the European Championship final against Italy, because I felt like they were there for the taking. But I don't I don't see how Southgate did too much wrong, really, in this tournament. I think they were missing that bit of luck that actually maybe they had in earlier tournaments and then weren't able to take advantage. If you think back to the semi-final of the Euros, Kane misses the penalty, it rolls back to him and he scores. This time he misses the penalty and of course he hits it so far over. It's probably still not coming back now. But I'm sort of on the more positive side of England, even though on paper it was their worst effort under Southgate because they'd reached at least the semi-finals of the other two. I saw a team, in my opinion, that would have taken steps forward. So I think England did well. I think, you know, his team selection was better. And even some of the calls he made, like, you know, Maguire didn't let anybody down. I felt like he was...
Maguire was good. One of our best
players. I felt like maybe that second... we are going over old ground here, I suppose. But that Giroud winner, he was just marginally slow to him. But I think overall, you know, it was a big call to pick Maguire and start him and put full faith in him. And he definitely sort of didn't let the country down in that regard. So I'm actually going to say that outside of the sort of the obvious teams, and we'll also get to Morocco in their third place playoff, but I do feel like England were as good as any team in it.
I think there's flaws to the England side and Southgate as well. The argument I just can't be having from that game against France is that this kind of theory that Kane shouldn't have taken the second penalty. Imagine how mad it would have been after that brilliant first penalty he took to then get someone else over. It's just hindsight just coming into play there and baffling. But
absolutely.
Yeah, so a half-decent tournament for England. In terms of disappointments, then, Mark, I mean, there's probably a few in there. Who wins the award for that one?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose my biggest individual disappointment moment was that Kane missed, because it was, you know, to become England's all-time greatest goal scorer, potentially win a quarterfinal with Morocco in the semis, you know, that was, the fact I support Tottenham as well, and you sort of feel for Kane even more, I think, in those situations. But in terms of teams, and again, just looking at it objectively, Denmark, you know, they were my dark horses. They actually played really badly, didn't they? Apart from a spell against France, which is bizarre, really, that their best performance was against France. They were poor and, you know, deserved to go home early. And you do look at, you know, if you won that group, the draw was there, you know, there was a path, as France have found, to the final, and Denmark just were awful, really, from the first minute of the tournament. Didn't do enough. And I'm also going to chuck in a team that did make it out of the group, and that's Spain, because they put 7 on Costa Rica, but they scored with nearly every shot. They barely had a shot on target after that. They just pass it around midfield and just don't have any penetration in the team. And I always argued against people that felt that the kind of that golden generation Spanish team was boring, because I just didn't see it that way at all. I think that this current lot were boring. And apart from, you know, the game against Germany was a high technical one, but I think it was because Germany was so open that allowed Spain to play their game. And actually, you look back against Japan, I mean, from what I remember of that game, didn't really do enough. And then against Morocco, one shot on target in 120 minutes.
Was really dull, wasn't it?
And it's up to them.
90,
you know, the onus is on Spain in those situations to take the ball forward. You look at that. If you've got Pedri and Gavi in your team, and they are only young, they will get better. And then you've got people like Ansu Fati coming off the bench. You should be able to do more. So I was just disappointed with how they played after the way that they'd started the tournament.
Okay, so we've discussed the teams. Let's have a look at individual players then. There's always someone that sort of breaks out. It feels like in recent years it was James Rodriguez, wasn't it, who really broke through. There's always one player that comes onto people's radar. Who has it been for you, Mark, this tournament?
Yeah, I mean, he's really going under the radar. I think Messi's been quite good.
to be fair, Mark, you said it, you know, not just on these World Cup previews, but when we've been looking at domestic football, and you, I know you've put up Messi, and it, I, I know easy to say Messi, but he is getting on now, and there were doubts. I saw a clip, and I know, again, it's easy with hindsight, but Gary Neville after the opening game, and he said no one's scared of Messi anymore, and that's not aged very well. But you've called it all season. It's been a remarkable campaign for him, and that assist in the last game was just majestic. It felt like I'd sort of been transported back to my youth watching Barcelona when he was sort of early 20s. It was just a brilliant moment.
Yeah, I mean, last season was not a good one for him at Paris Saint-Germain. Probably a number of reasons. Don't think the environment was great in Paris last season. This year, whenever you watched him, and in Ligue 1 or Champions League, just felt like he was back to the Messi that people knew. I do wonder whether he was like peaking for this and almost used last season as a breather, it just felt this year, you know, like how you get the Irish horse trainers that just get their horses to peak for Cheltenham or wherever it is, and it just feels like that Messi's been doing that for this World Cup. It's been on his radar for a considerable amount of time, and I mean he's been the best player. So I think you can't. It's easy to just go, well, he's the best player, so he should play like that, because it doesn't always work out like that. I'm delighted he personally has had a great tournament. A couple of honourable mentions, I suppose. Firstly, to Antoine Griezmann, you know, the new Kante, the way that he's patrolling that midfield. He's actually doing the Kante job to some extent. I'm being a bit facetious there, but he's doing some of the Kante job and some of the Pogba job.
And he's been brilliant. It's so fun to watch him. It really is.
And I'm really pleased because I was on the Guardian maybe about a week ago, 10 days, when not as many people were talking about Griezmann. I just said, like, you know, he's quietly having a very good tournament. And then he was, you know, the best French player against England, wasn't he? And then he was the best French player as well in the semi-final. So he's not quietly going about his business now. He's just been fantastic. Maybe he's been in the wrong position his whole life. And then another one, again, this is not under the radar because I think a lot of people are talking about him, but Anahi at Morocco, the number eight in midfield for them, plays for Angers, bottom sort of, you know, a low team in France. And he's been brilliant. I heard on the radio that they're saying that Leicester, it sounds like, have got a deal ready for him. I've no idea if he's any good and whether this is just one of those, you know, James Rodriguez style plays well for a month moments. But he deserves a shout out. He's been really good.
Absolutely. Let's finish this little segment then with our favourite moment, or one of the better moments of the tournament, and best goals as well. We can throw them together. I'm going to put mine in that's just popped to mind. And I think it's the first time for a long while where I've made an audible gasp at the telly. And that was the Netherlands free kick really late on. Just the audacity to take it like that and it to come off. Looking back, I mean, I'm not quite sure why I celebrated it, because I've got, you know, I think both of us, Mark, have got investments in Argentina and I've got sort of Messi golden ball and golden boot. So that was a fairly pivotal moment in the tournament. But just such a fun way to take a free kick. It was a real delight to watch that.
Yeah, I mean, we've got some long-standing Argentina bets. I think the long shot I put up at the start, wasn't it, was Messi to win the Golden Boot,
right,
Argentina,
yeah,
at 40. So hopefully that comes in. But, yeah, I was also on Netherlands, so that was a delight, that Veghorst goal. And, yeah, I felt like Argentina's behaviour just before, in like about the 10 minutes before that, wasn't great. And so it felt deserved, really, that that they were punished. I'm also going to give a shout out to when Saudi Arabia beat Argentina. It feels like very anti-Argentina, typical English.
Feels so long ago, that game.
But yeah, but what a moment it was when the second goal was a top strike as well, wasn't it?
But brilliant,
just,
brilliant.
The way they battled with that second half, and then about half an hour, absolutely sensational. Best goals. I was struggling to split it between two. The Depay one for the Dutch against the US. That 20 odd passes was like, wow. You know, that's proper football. And I don't know if this is recency bias, but you mentioned it earlier. the Messi assist for the Alvarez, sort of he's second and Argentina's third. I think that was just a real memorable moment. And if Argentina win the World Cup, I mean, that could be one of the sort of, it's not quite, well, it's definitely not Maradona's goal against England, the dribbling one, but it did have that element of, you know, I'm the best player in the world. You know, I'm one of the greatest players ever, and I'm going to show everybody how good I am, you know. And
we've seen Messi do that before. What was it, 2004-05, was it, when he scored that? Was it against Getafe or something?
Oh, like against Getafe, yeah. When he picked up,
I mean, I know it wasn't quite those levels, but the fact that he's still doing it, you know, a decade on is really
and
remarkable.
Garvino was a good centre-back. Yeah. You know? He's been one of the best centre-backs in the tournament, and he absolutely destroyed him. So, yeah, it was great and sets up what is a fantastic final ahead.
I know you mentioned earlier there, Mark, about the long shot W pub. I know a few listeners have got in touch with me. They took it one step further. Sky were offering Argentina to win the World Cup, Messi golden boot and Messi golden ball. That was 66-1. So an exciting weekend ahead for many indeed. Let's preview the final now. Yes, it's Argentina against France. Sunday, 3 o'clock. Argentina 9-5, 7-4. France 2-1. The draw to lift the trophy. Even money, Argentina 10-11. France. France edging it in the betting, Mark. Is that the way you see it?
Ever so slightly. If you said to me you've got to pick a favourite for this game, I would edge towards France. But I do think it's as close as that betting suggests. I'm struggling to trust anyone that has a massive opinion on this game in terms of who's definitely going to win. You can make a case for both teams, but I do think that France it's hard to put a reason to why. I think maybe it's just that I trust them in midfield, maybe a bit more if Rabiot's back, you know, because Tchouameni's obviously had a good tournament. We've already spoken about how good Griezmann has been. We haven't mentioned Rabiot, and he's somebody that, because he's, I'd say he's got a lot of critics, it's fair to say, Rabiot, and I wouldn't be his biggest fan, but I think in this World Cup, he's done fine. And then you go through, like, I think Argentina, if they're to win the way they win, is Messi being great. I think if France are to win, they can do it in different ways. It could be Mbappe putting up that individual moment, or it could be the collective, you know, it could be that, you know, ball into the box and they score off a set piece, because we've seen them do that, you know, before. And, you know, there was that one against England where they weren't creating anything and then one good ball in and, you know, Giroud's on the end of it and that decides the game. So, yeah, I think France are the narrowest of favourites. But, I mean, this is why I'm glad, actually, that Argentina and France won, because I do feel like with a final, you know, the underdog stories, you know, it's great. But at the end of it, I want to see two top teams playing in a final. And I think we've got that. And I'm excited for the game. But like I say, if you forced me to pick a favourite, I'd go for France.
I think it's probably fair to say that the weakness in this French side are the defence. Was their first clean sheet, wasn't it, of the tournament against Morocco? But they still gave up 13 shots in that game. That's going to be the area that Argentina feel that they can get the better of.
Yeah, I mean, because if you look at it, obviously, like Teo Hernandez, who scored the opening goal in that game. I mean, he's basically a wing back.
Nice finish as well, by the way.
It was. Yeah, and he's very good going forward. Against England, he had trouble against Saka, and then he obviously gave away the penalty, and Ziyech and Boufal were taking it in turns to have a dribble past him. And the theory is, well, if Boufal's doing that to you, what's Messi going to do if he drifts over to that side? I tend to think that football's not that simplistic, and whoever it plays, you know, will be asked to kind of help him out on that side. Upamecano played in the quarterfinal. I've never been a big fan. And there are people in the Bundesliga who watch the Bundesliga more regularly than me who'd say, oh, no, he's playing better for Bayern Munich. I don't care. I just think he's got too many mistakes in him. So it was actually, I think it helped them when Konate came in against Morocco. And he did well, himself in that game. But I agree, they gave up too many opportunities against Morocco. Some of it was game state. You're 1-0 up. You are going to play on the counter-attack. It's a World Cup semi-final. You've got an early lead. You're the favourites. You feel like you can just see it out. There was something about that from France that actually they could have been made to pay. And Lloris has been better than they would have hoped he would have needed to be, if that makes sense. I think in the last couple of matches against England and against Morocco. So, yeah, for sure, the French defence is not as good as the one that played, 4 years ago.
How did you rank the Argentina performance against Croatia? Because I think we look back and the Messi brilliance kind of overshadows it slightly and overshadows it for good reason. But just looking back at, they were done on the shot count by Croatia. I think for the opening, maybe 25 minutes, half an hour, I think Croatia had a fairly fair hold on the game, and then it kind of got away from them. But it was a convincing win. How do you think they'll be feeling going into this with the performances that they've put in so far?
Yeah, I think that they'll feel like, because of the way the game ended and they were so on top, I think that they'll be feeling like fantastic, Argentina, because I'm not even sure if this is what happened, but they will feel like, you know, they grew into that game, and by the second half, they were so superior. I actually felt for half an hour, as you mentioned there, I was thinking, God, Croatia look like they're on top here. They obviously haven't got that threat in behind Croatia that, yes, Argentina always felt like they had them, didn't they? You know, just on the edge of the box, and you weren't getting past us. Obviously, France are different there because they can sling the ball into the box. And we've seen, even against Weghorst and against Australia as well, Argentina don't tend to defend well in those moments. And then you've got somebody like Mbappe or Dembele that can run beyond and can cause a threat. So I think this will be quite a different game. These are two teams that are very similar in style. I don't think either of them will go after the ball. They'll get men behind it, and then they'll look to hit on the counter-attack and play through their two genius individuals, one on each team, Messi and Mbappe. So that's why I'm looking forward to this game, because I think it's all there. It's set up to be a really intriguing, and I use that word quite often when I'm about to tip unders. But I think it's a really intriguing World Cup final we've got.
It really is. With all of that being said, what's the bet for this one?
Yeah, actually, I'm a complete U-turn here. I'm going to go for both teams to score. I think the price has just got too big. Yes, World Cup finals tend to be low scoring, and I fully take that on board, as do sort of all finals. You know, it's traditional that they're low scoring, but they're not all low scoring, and they haven't all got Messi and Mbappe playing in them. And I think if you have a look at it, I mean, let's go through Argentina's matches so far. This is a team that scored one against Saudi Arabia, and if you can remember back that far, could have had three or four in that first half. Then they got two against Mexico. They got two against Poland. They got a couple against Australia. They got a couple against Netherlands. And then they got three against Croatia in the semi-finals. And then you go through the French one. I'm going to knock out the Tunisia game, because obviously that was just a complete reserve team that played in that. This is a team that got four against Australia. They put two past Denmark. Obviously, the Tunisia game was the reserves. They put three past Poland, two past England, and two past Morocco. So I think that this actually might buck the trend and can live up to the hype. So, yeah, both teams to score. If you were sort of looking at other bets, I think Ousmane Dembele maybe for a goal, somebody we haven't spoken about too much. I don't rate the Argentinian fullbacks, and that's a big issue when you've got Dembele on one side and Mbappe on the other one. So I feel like Dembele had his quietest game against Morocco. Wouldn't be surprised if he sort of livens up in this game. In terms of the cards, I mean, we haven't seen that many cards, certainly red cards, in this World Cup. Whoever plays right back for Argentina, it could be either of the two guys that are paid throughout the tournament. But do check that one out, because I'm pretty sure that they're going to stop Mbappe by fair means or foul, and that'll probably be foul more often than not. And I also think Christian Romero playing over on that side as well is another one to consider.
Just a quick one, Mark, on the top goal scorer, golden boot market. I know a lot of our listeners will probably have Lionel Messi in some type of bet with this market. He just about edges it at the moment. 10 to 11, Mbappe 21 to 20. They're joint on goals, aren't they? But Messi is an assist ahead. If you had Messi as top goal scorer for this tournament, would you be confident with that bet slip in hand?
Yes, because, obviously it depends, because if it's just a top goal scorer, you're dead heating at the moment with Mbappe. So some bookmakers did that, didn't they? And then some did the golden boot, which is assist and then count back. Look, the position you want to be in here is that if nothing happens, you're the winner. Like, you know, so you would rather be in Messi's position rather than Mbappe's, because, like I say, you need something to happen for the Messi bet to lose. And as much as I've said, I think there'll be goals in this game. If you look at the expectation for goals, it's in for, not much more than two, really. So, of those two, how many does Mbappe score? He's then got to get either a goal or an assist. So I think you are, you're in position A if you're on Messi. So, and good luck to the Messi massive.
I cannot wait for it. I'm so excited. It should be brilliant. One game I can wait for is the third place playoff. Let's do a quick preview of that now. Is this the most pointless game in football? I can't think of too many more. It's the third place playoff. It's 3 o'clock on Saturday. Maybe go out and do your shopping or something. Christmas shopping. Do the wrapping. Croatia against Morocco. 13 to 10 Croatia. 21 to 10 Morocco. 12 to 5 the draw. Let's start with Morocco, Mark, because they have been good fun. I thought they put up a really good fight against France as well. A real surprise package. They've done well.
They have. I didn't find their football boring. I thought they defended well, but when they attacked with numbers. They just lacked quality, didn't they, in those key positions, really. That it wasn't a case of them being really dull. And I found all of their games, and I think their fans had something to do with that, but I just found, apart from the opening match against Croatia, the rest of them were just thrilling. And I loved the way they chased that game against France. And had they got the equaliser when they were pushing, I don't think it would have been against the run of play. Hakimi is absolute top quality, isn't he, on that right-hand side. And that does help when you've got somebody as good as him in the team. And they used him well. And poor Saïss, you could barely run. If you're getting, Giroud's out running, something's going wrong. and Agard couldn't play in that semi-final. And they just had... I was going to say they had nothing left, but they didn't play like they had nothing left against France. Amrabat was fantastic in central midfield. That tackle on Mbappe actually was one of my favourite moments of the World Cup as well.
And he just launched
himself into it. They've been brilliant. And I think it's a nice game. Pointless it would be. If this was Argentina against France, it would be pointless. But Croatia only came onto the football scene, was it 96 was their first tournament. Morocco, no African team ever been this far. So I think that it matters to both teams. It's a chance to wave goodbye to Modric on the biggest stage of the lot. I was just a bit disappointed when there's some quotes from the Moroccan manager, and I was thinking about sort of tipping Morocco, where he was suggesting that anybody with any kind of injury just wouldn't be playing because he didn't think it was right to risk them. And, they got club matches sort of, coming up very soon. So you want to see the teams before you decide the way to go with this one.
With that being said, which way are you going for it?
I'm going to go for over two and a half. in this one. 10 of the last 11 of, in third place playoffs have been over 2.5 goals. So it was going to be Morocco, and I would edge towards Morocco if they've got a decent team out.
Okay, who's excited for the Premier League? I certainly am. Let's preview that now. Yeah, Boxing Day football then. Back to domestic stuff very soon. Mark and I are both on leave next week, so we thought, which better way to finish off Bets Club for this year than to take a look ahead to Boxing Day football? And we'll start with your boys, Mark. Brentford against Tottenham. This is the 12:30 game on Boxing Day. I was going to ask you, where you going? I think I know the answer to it. How do you feel about this one?
When I first looked at these games, I'd forgotten everything that had happened in that first half of the Premier League. I don't know about you. I was really struggling. I was like,
well, the strange thing is obviously EFL football's return. So Norwich played last Saturday, and obviously England were playing as well. And I just had to pick one game to go all in. I couldn't concentrate on both Norwich and England, despite they were playing at different times. So I just had to concentrate fully on England. I almost forgot Norwich were playing.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've forgotten that Nathan Jones was the manager of Southampton. Like, that was one. And we were talking in the office yesterday about the sack race. And I was sort of mentioning Jesse Marsh. And someone said, no, he's like 12-1. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course, Frank Lampard. Like, it's all gone wrong at Everton for him. So, I think it's really... it's a head scratcher, this Boxing Day one. The other thing I would say as well, Jack, is what's your thoughts on whether form from the first part of the season like counts 100% or is it 80%?
I don't think it's 100%. It's really intriguing. I mean, I guess the only thing we can partially go off is how, you know, EFL form has been since the return.
But it's not, I don't know, it just feels very difficult because obviously so many players have been at the World Cup. So I'm fascinated. And what I would say is that we haven't had this situation.
I mean, it's really intriguing, you know, for the case of Spurs. We'll start it because you've got a striker in Harry Kane who's essentially, I know, not single-handedly, but, you know, missed the penalty to knock his country out.
Yeah, he'll need lifting,
and you could have, you know, World Cup winners,
Jack,
there,
as much as the that penalty that he shot. And I think what it needs is people in that Spurs dressing room to sort of take the mickey out of him. That's kind of how it's dealt with in a football environment usually, you know, after gags. And then just he'll get back to scoring goals soon enough. For this game, actually, though, I was going to go for Kulusevski to score. We're still unsure of the participation of Ivan Toney. Of course, he had those, the betting charges put against him, didn't he? And he hasn't been suspended yet. I don't know what's going on there. Lloris and Romero might need time off, obviously playing in the World Cup final. Perisic is playing in the third, fourth game as well. And Bentancur suspended. And Richarlison is out injured. So this is a Tottenham team looks slightly more vulnerable at the prices. But it would depend a lot on whether Toney's playing. And I think Kulusevski is absolutely different class. I mean, he's still massively underrated. Changed the game for Tottenham when he came on against Leeds. He's scoring goals against Motherwell in a pre-season friendly, just in a friendly the other day. He's somebody I think Brentford might struggle to contain.
It's funny you mentioned there about Motherwell. I was speaking to Kenny McLean in the week, Norwich midfielder, and he's very Scottish, and he was kind of going on about his youth career, and I thought he'd said he was managed by a man called Peter Head at one point, but because he sort of split it, and I said, "Oh, I haven't heard of him." What he was? I said, "Team Peterhead." I was like, "Oh, of course." I was convinced he said it in a way like a first and a surname. Yeah. I don't know, just a funny moment. 3:00 Boxing Day fixtures. We'll start with Crystal Palace against Fulham. Palace 19-20. The draw 11-4. Fulham 5-2. Mark.
I was going to go Fulham or draw, double chance. Lost their last two matches, if you can remember that far back, but they were competitive. Against both Manchester clubs. And I've said this, I don't know how many times, about Crystal Palace. They just don't win enough games for me to trust them at short prices.
Okay. Everton Wolves.
Yeah, so, I mean, Wolves have got a new manager. That's might have slipped under the radar. Lopetegui has come in. I mean, he's an improvement on what they had. But of course, they're bottom of the table at the moment. I think he'll be looking to sort of just build gradually and use January as that springboard for them to bring the forward players they need to stay in the division, because they haven't got them at the moment. I was going to go for a draw. Everton have scored once in their last six league matches. And of course, mentioned earlier on there, Frank Lampard feels like the pressure's growing on him. And it might be one of those matches where they both think, actually, let's not, you know, if it's a draw with 20 to go, let's not lose this game.
Okay, let's take a look at Leicester, Newcastle, 23 to 10. Leicester, same price, draw, 23 to 20, Newcastle. Newcastle have been going brilliantly.
They have, and probably one of the teams that wished that the season would have just kept going. Whether they can just jump straight back into it, we just don't know, do we? So I was going to go for Leicester draw, no bet, and this is not really an anti-Newcastle, or they're definitely going to slow down. Just the fact I think Leicester sorted themselves out before the World Cup, picked up 12 points from 15. The one defeat was 1-0 against Man City. If you remember that game, it was poor, but Leicester defended well in that match, and De Bruyne scored a free kick. I think Face has made a, is that how you pronounce it? Face, the Belgian centre-back that's come in for with the Louise haircut. He's made a big difference to them. I'm surprised Belgium didn't use him at the World Cup, because looks a player to me. And so Leicester draw, no bet.
If, like Mark, you'd forgotten Nathan Jones was now at Southampton, this is your reminder. They play Brighton at the weekend. Brighton could have a World Cup winner in the squad.
Yeah, so that would be a blow, won't it? That McAllister, I'm presuming, won't play in this Boxing Day game. I mean, that party, if they win in Buenos Aires, is not going to be finished by Boxing Day. So I think Brighton have been very positive under De Zerbi. Too early to say as to what impact Nathan Jones will have at Southampton. I was just going to go for both teams to score.
5:30 Boxing Day. It's Aston Villa against Liverpool, Mark.
Yeah, we've had to stop a couple of times here, Jack. I don't know if it's the cough or the alcohol from last night. I'm going to blame influenza. we're going to go for here Aston Villa or draw, double chance. Now, Liverpool, of course, Mohamed Salah didn't go to the World Cup. Nunez was back quickly. So I'm not saying that they'll be, really hurt by, you think Alexander-Arnold. So actually, I think Liverpool will be fine coming back from the World Cup. But this is a horrible game to come back to, because Aston Villa, Unai Emery was only had a couple of matches. He's now had longer to work with that team. And he's somebody that can set a team up to frustrate. And we saw that with Villarreal. He did that expertly in the Champions League, deny team space. I was looking at Villa or draw, double chance in this one. Not that I think that Liverpool, like I say, are a poor team or anything like that. It feels like quite a hard game.
It does. Just on that, the players that haven't gone to the World Cup, do you see that as an advantage, or would you have preferred players to have been playing recently?
I feel like you're better off having had a run of games, but without necessarily slogging your guts out. And there are some that have done that, haven't they? And I've only really been following to what Tottenham have done with their players, and they all had a week off. If you went to the World Cup, you had a week off and then you were back. That feels about right to me. And it's not like you're pressing like crazy. When in club football, it's so much quicker than what international football is. For many of them, it would have felt, winter sun. I reckon most of them will come back feeling quite good about themselves. Obviously, a few caveats to that, whether how disappointed you were with your own performance or if you're carrying sort of baggage from errors at the World Cup. So that's maybe different. And, the 8 o'clock game that we're about to, this Arsenal v West Ham match, this is where the big World Cup blow comes, really, isn't it? Gabriel Jesus picking up that serious injury, could be out for, they're talking about maybe as much as 3 months. I mean, what a blow that would be for Premier League leaders Arsenal. They've opened up a comfortable gap, I suppose, as comfortable as you can be when Man City are the team that are chasing you. But he's such an important part to what they do. I was thinking actually of going for West Ham or draw a double chance, just that they'll be able to sit in a bit like what I suggested Aston Villa might do. And you'll see here, I'm not picking up on too many favourites. And that's because I do want to just, I'd rather either oppose the favourite or leave the game alone in a lot of these instances, because we just don't know how teams are going to come back. So I'm treading carefully with all teams, not just Arsenal, but that Jesus injury. I think spending in January for the sake of it is usually a mistake. I think Arsenal should go out and buy somebody because they've got an opportunity to win the league. And I don't think you want to be relying on Nketiah for too long.
Yeah, I think the trend I'm seeing throughout this Premier League preview, Mark, is always, of course, gamble responsibly, but even more so this weekend. Just really tread
carefully in terms of these Boxing Day games, for sure.
Got a couple on the 27th. We'll rattle through those. Chelsea Bournemouth, the first up.
Yeah, well, I mean, Graham Potter, if you remember, he was under pressure before the World Cup. Chelsea have lost four of their last five games, which is, I mean, sackable for most Chelsea managers. The one exception was a win over Dynamo Zagreb, and that was only 2-1. Their expected goals for, on one side I was looking at, is the same as Everton. And only five teams have got a lower expected goals than Chelsea. So they're having big problems creating, and Brozier's out, isn't he, as well now, long term. So, yeah, but I think Chelsea will beat Bournemouth, so I'm going to go for Chelsea in under 3.5 goals. But it unlikely to be pretty, because most of Chelsea's stuff's not pretty at the moment.
No, indeed. Manchester United, Nottingham Forest, Mark.
Yeah, and so it looks like United here, you would assume, would be without their first-choice centre-backs. Varane and Martinez will be playing in the World Cup final, or at least representing their countries. Martinez doesn't always play for Argentina. That said, I was still going to go for Manchester United to win 2-0. I think Maguire and Lindelof against what Forest have got up front is perfectly acceptable. Nottingham Forest, only one away goal in the Premier League so far.
Okay, one game on the 28th that we'll take a look at as well, and that's Leeds against Manchester City.
Yeah, so Manchester City to win and both teams to score. I mean, City not overly handicapped by the World Cup. When you think about it, a lot of their players, like, you know, De Bruyne came back early. Obviously, Alvarez is playing in the World Cup final, but he wouldn't have started anyway because they've got a certain Erling Haaland up front. And of course, against the team, I think he supports, isn't it? Or certainly got an affection for in terms of Leeds United. It looks like a complete and utter mismatch, because that defence, I saw them before the World Cup when they conceded 4 at Tottenham. And I mean, the idea that they're going to have to go up against Haaland would scare me, I think, from a Leeds point of view. But they do go forward. They do attack under Jesse Marsh, and they keep pushing, and that might enable them to get a goal. But I wouldn't be surprised if Man City got 3 or 4.
There we go. That was very fun. An exciting week and a bit of football ahead. What are the plans for Christmas then, Mark?
It's going to be a relatively quiet one. So we're going to just be indoors just as a small family for the actual dinner. Then we're going around to my mum's with like all of my sort of sisters and nieces and nephews in the evening. So that will turn quite boozy. I've actually got a significant amount of time off over Christmas.
Have you got your
Norfolk turkey all lined up?
Yeah. No, excited for that. I'm going to have to go to my mum's though for Christmas dinner, because my oven's not big enough to kind of throw a big bird in there. So I'm relying on her. I like to kind of go Vicar of Dibley style on Christmas Day and just go to as many people's houses as I can and just keep eating. Just keep going until I can't.
Do you go
anymore.
For a swim? Do you go for a Christmas morning swim? Is that
usually
something?
Boxing Day.
Oh, okay.
If I'm going for a swim. I mean, the North Sea is freezing at the best of times. But yeah, there's a lot of sort of Boxing Day swims, particularly up in North Norfolk, Cromer way. So yeah, I might have a dip. I did park run last Christmas. That was
nice.
On a Saturday. But yeah, it makes you feel a bit better about devouring a box of chocolates later on in the day, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, I'm going to just I need a few days off after this World Cup, that's for sure.
Well, you deserve it. And hopefully Argentina lift the trophy. There we go then. Thanks ever so much for listening. We'll be back again very soon to preview more brilliant footballing goodness. Until then, stay safe. Remember to gamble responsibly. Only ever gamble with money that you can afford to lose. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of Mark Langdon's Bets Club.